In this episode of Movie Rollers, we review Zero Dark Thirty, The Impossible, and Promised Land. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter. In theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, the show is for you. I don't know about you guys, but I'm still stuffed from our lunch.
I am stuffed.
I can't talk. I can barely talk.
My belly has literally come over my pants.
And the reason for all of this rather satisfied full belly talk is we went for lunch with our friend Jeannie, who took us to an Indian vegetarian place.
It was delicious.
Eat all you can. And we certainly did.
We did. Yes. Yeah. I think our no buttons were off.
It was amazing. They kept filling our plates. It was so weird. They just kept, every time I was like, finished a bowl, they were like, here, have some more.
It was Indian hospitality at its best.
And who was I to say no? $13 as well. How crazy is that?
Yeah.
I don't think we'll have to eat till next week.
I'm not going to eat today or tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm done for today, that's
I'm
for sure.
I'm done for today, yeah. Ugh. So, on full bellies.
So, we have three movies to review today. I'm personally very excited to talk about Zero Dark Thirty, so you want to kick off with that?
Sure.
So Zero Dark Thirty is the latest movie from the writer-director team of Catherine Bigelow and Mark Bowl, both of whom were at the helm of the Oscar-winning movie from a couple of years ago, The Hurt Locker, certainly a movie I was very excited to see. The movie is essentially about the raid on Bin Laden, or rather the hunt for Bin Laden. The movie started out, I think, as being a little bit of a different story. Catherine Bigelow, in an interview, I think, mentioned that they were close to actually wrapping up the movie when Bin Laden himself was actually shot and killed, and so they realized they had an opportunity here to change the direction of the movie, so they did so. It essentially follows the story of one of the operatives, the CIA operatives, who was very involved in the hunt for Bin Laden. She looked over intelligence for many, many years and eventually led her down a path towards where she believed she had enough evidence to pinpoint his location. And it stars Joel Egerton, Jason Clarke, Jessica Chastain. I think they're the main leads in the movie. So who would like to talk about Zero Dark Thirty?
I'll go. So, Joe, as you mentioned, much has been made of Catherine Bigelow becoming the first woman ever to win the Best Director Oscar. Well, with this film, I believe is another coup for her and cements her status as a bona fide top-tier American filmmaker. More than anything else, I think the movie is a brilliant piece of investigative journalism as it charts with painstaking detail the tortuous and often disappointing path that led to the eventual capture of Bin Laden. And the last third of the film requires audiences to remind themselves to breathe. It is that effective. Mm. This is certainly not the best movie of the year, but is an amazement all the same.
For me, it's an interesting choice to make a movie like this because Act of Valor earlier this year got panned. And for me, if this wasn't about the actual killing of Bin Laden, and if it hadn't been directed by Catherine Bigelow, we would almost have the same movie in some ways. That said, this is a really intense, good movie. And again, I think if it wasn't, if I wasn't such a fan of the TV program Homeland, I think this would have had an even huger impact on me. But clearly, I think this is going to be an Oscar darling this year.
Yeah, another recommendation here from my end. This was brilliant, put simply. I enjoyed every minute of this. The movie itself was kind of a spy thriller in the beginning part of the movie. It was all about espionage and advanced interrogation techniques. I really admired Bigelow's attempt to be apolitical again in a movie that was so politically charged. I think especially running up to the election, there was lots of talk about, you know, the brilliancy of the president's decision to go after Bin Laden. He was not in this movie at all, but this was terrific, nail-biting stuff, an accomplished piece of filmmaking like the likes of which I haven't really seen this year. I mean, I think this is, like you said, yes, the piece of movie-making journalism, and you know, a couple of technical potential technical awards I see get this one getting, but we can talk about those later.
Yeah, I've been using this phrase a lot lately, but I'm glad that this too is what cinema can be. I mean, it's not really a traditional entertainer of a movie. It's not the kind of movie you might want to go watch on Thanksgiving Day or watch when all your family's around. It's not a film in the traditional sense.
It's not a feel-good movie for any, you know, it's not a family, let's go watch The Sound of Music. It's not that.
Correct. But I think why people are talking about it and why it's gotten so much traction is that, you know, it's kind of a lightning in a bottle because it's an utterly timely, intelligent, and well-executed reflection of our own recent history. And isn't it amazing that in just little more than a year after Bin Laden was captured, this truthful version is out for people to see and ponder upon? So I commend the fact that most people didn't know, rightly so, what led to the events leading up to Bin Laden's capture. But now, thanks to all the work that's been done, it's available to us. And I think that's, in many ways, this is almost like an exceptionally well-made episode of Nova on television, or yeah, 60 Minutes or something.
That's the piece that niggles me, Yazdi. That's the very point that I find so strange about this movie. Clearly, it's a compelling story. And then you add to the fact that it's actually based on first-hand accounts, which is the disclaimer at the start of the movie. It's going to have you enthralled and captivated right from the start. But for me, because it happened so recently, like you said, why not make a documentary? Why dramatize it? I mean, it's just a strange choice to me that something that happened so recently. Is it entertainment, or is she rewriting history? I don't know. Is it so truthful that it's going to be a documentary?
Catherine Bigelow is not a documentary maker. She's a filmmaker, and she chose to make this movie. So I don't know what you're saying. I mean, there are going to be documentaries about this, and there are going to be recreations of this.
And we've watched them, right.
But that's not what she does as a filmmaker.
This is what she wanted to do, and she has every right to do it. I guess it just irks me a little bit that, is it so close to history that this will be the history we remember, or is it that this is a piece of entertainment? And I guess I'm stuck in that, you know, middle ground. Like, it's strange to me because is this the history that we want to remember? You've said it's a great piece of investigative journalism. Well, why not make it a 60 minutes episode then?
Because it was based on real events, but it was based on real events in the way that a filmmaker was able to get them from people who weren't really allowed to speak frankly about the matter. I mean, this isn't intended to be portrayed as anything other than the dramatization of real events.
Right.
This isn't intended to be portrayed as a factual recreation of events. So the Jessica Chastain character herself, I don't even know if she's just a fabrication or whether she was a real person. I don't know if anyone has any insight into that, but I kept getting the sense throughout the movie that she was either an amalgam of various people, because this was a team that hunted Bin Laden, not necessarily an individual, and whether she's the kind of the movie personification of that team, whether she was male, female, or what. I just got the sense that she was a terrific protagonist around which to base the story.
Yeah,
it's funny, until you mentioned it, I hadn't thought about it. I actually thought that there is maybe a person not with the same name, or maybe even the same gender, but I think there is a real life person who relentlessly and doggedly pursued this, and I think, to answer your question, I think that more than anything else is what attracted Catherine Bigelow, because I think there's a lot about the Jessica Chastain character, if that character really existed, who is so resolute and so driven that probably that resonated with Catherine Bigelow. And in many ways, the movie, she has made the choice to pivot the entire movie around the central character. So I suspect that might have been the motivation for making this movie.
And don't get me wrong, I really enjoyed the movie. I just struggle with the fact that I feel that maybe there needed to be a bit more time between this happening and a film about it coming out. It's very easy for us to watch, you know, Link, and most of our recent podcasts have been about events in history almost. And I think the distance in time allows you to watch that film as a piece of entertainment. I just feel this is just too close, that it may taint our view of what history was. And I don't know if that's a responsibility that filmmakers have or journalists have, and it crosses the line.
Point well taken. I mean, let's talk about the filmmaking.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I mean, blowaway performances. Jessica Chastain, Jason Clarke, and for me, Kyle Chandler, who we just saw be amazing in Argo. So two great performances by Kyle Chandler in two recent films. Amazing.
I can't fault the performances. I think because Bigelow chose deliberately this kind of investigative style to tell the whole story, by definition, none of these characters come with any background. They don't come with any baggage. We don't know anything about any of these characters. There's no, you know, background story. And I think along with that comes, you know, along with that choice comes all of the baggage associated with that choice. So because we don't know so much about Jessica Chastain's character, it's hard to identify or be that emotionally connected with her, because we don't know where she came from, what was her driver, etc. But be that as it may, I think you can't fault any of the acting here. It's brilliant. I don't remember where I've seen a Jason Clarke before, but you know, he has a pretty major role here through the first half of the movie. And you know, I was scratching my head thinking, you know, where did this dude come from?
He's pretty been good. On TV mainly. Looked him up, and you're right. But he was very good.
Yeah.
And he had a lot of airtime, but he carried it well.
Yeah.
I found the movie difficult to watch in places. Did either of you? You know, particularly the first section, the opening act, where I guess it's not a spoiler to say that this movie involves a movie maker's exploration of themes such as advanced interrogation techniques.
Yeah,
that was very hard to watch. But again, I was amazed at the fact that the movie wasn't necessarily trying to take a stance as to whether or not this was the right thing to do. It just addressed the fact that this is what happened.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Again, I feel very much like the Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
You know, Yazdi, it was like one of our earlier podcasts where, you know, you use the word apolitical to describe her work. Mm-hmm. And it really was another piece of movie making where she doesn't pass judgment necessarily on events that took place or on the depiction of certain realities. She just shows you those events. And, you know, I have to credit the writer Mark Bowl for this as well. We're giving Catherine Bigelow all the credit here, but it's very difficult to do, I think, without having one being on one side of the debate or the other.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, I think like The Hurt Locker, you know, I think the best films and all the best films about war, this movie will reinforce your personal views about the matter, no matter where you stand on the political spectrum. And that's a very difficult thing to do, to be credible and yet not take sides. And I commend it for not shying away from any issues. And there's
right.
You know, this film provides very rich fodder, like you said, regarding the long ongoing debate about the value and ethics of torturing political prisoners to extract very valuable information from them. And the movie kind of, you know, does not walk away from it and says, you know, this is what the United States did and this is what came out of it, and you make your own decisions,
right,
and you make your own judgments.
There was no this is right, this is right. wrong about it.
Yeah.
Which I think is very hard to do.
I think the other interesting thing was that I was almost expecting it to be about, you know, SEAL Team 6. And it was about them, but in a very peripheral way.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that she didn't spend a lot of time doing that and making them as human, I think, as she could have. I think it would have been an easy choice to add some drama to who those people actually were. But they kind of did their job deftly. They came in, they did their job, and they left.
But that would have been act of valor.
Yes.
You know, because that's essentially what that movie was. It was following their lives, the impact that the job that they do has on their family.
Yeah. But, I mean, clearly, you know, for me, the most difficult thing to watch about the film is, and this is absolutely a testament to Catherine Bigelow's directing, she is masterful, is the amount of tension created in this film. There was so much tension. I mean, I was literally clenching my butt cheeks all the way through, so much so that I felt like I needed to smoke a cigarette after the film was over.
So I think everything you've said is true about the second half of the movie, but not so much about the first half of the movie. And I think, you know, this film is not, in my opinion, is not as good as The Hurt Locker, but, you know, has a lot of the same sensibility. It looks, feels, and is edited like The Hurt Locker. And I'm not faulting any of it, but we had seen this kind of an approach for the first time in The Hurt Locker, and it wowed me. And this time around, particularly in the first half of the movie, it seemed too much, you know, seen that, done that kind of. But did anybody else feel that way?
No, I mean, I was really drawn into the tension.
Mm.
The movie it reminded me the most of, oddly, because the movies aren't similar at all, but anyone ever watch Firefox with Clint Eastwood back in the 80s?
Yeah.
Where you had this long drawn out espionage storyline followed by this, you know, huge bombastic action sequence. You know, in that movie, it involved the theft of a plane. In this movie, it involved a capture of Osama bin Laden. But there was this really long, slow build of tension of, you know, do we have him? Do we not have him? Even knowing the outcome didn't help offset that tension, because we all know the outcome. Osama bin Laden got popped in this particular raid. So we all knew the movie was going there. But nonetheless, the angst and the edge of the seatness that I had throughout the entire pursuit piece was up there.
Yeah, I'm with Yazdi, Joe, and I guess Yazdi, you and I are siding quite a lot these days, which is strange.
Yeah.
I need to worry about something here.
but for me, the impact was less, like I said in my intro, because I love Homeland. And Homeland is telling the same story, not about Osama bin Laden, but about another fictional Al-Qaeda leader. And that, to me, has so much more tension, and you get to see it in one-hour bits. Mm-hmm. And you get to delve into the story. So I think had I not watched Homeland, I would have been blown away by this story. But the fact that I'm an avid fan of Homeland really lessened its impact.
But Homeland is very fictional and in many ways far-fetched. So I think that's...
Yeah, but it wasn't a million miles from this movie, Joe. If you've and you don't really watch the series that much, but if you watch an episode, and I don't know, Yazdi, whether you watch Homeland, but if you watch one episode, all of the CIA, all of the torture techniques, they're all covered in that program too.
A couple of other things I wanted to talk about was the camera work in this movie was amazing to me. It was really noticeable. It was a kind of a handheld camera look, but it wasn't one of those make you barf in, you know, it was kind of one of those being there type cameras. But really just everything was framed and shot so well. And the editing, I think this is potentially, for me, one of the few movies that I really pay attention to how it's edited, how it's cut. The raid on bin Laden was edited expertly. I mean, the timing, the way that they kind of took you into the scene, you know, it was shot and directed, but in particular, the cuts and the timing of the cuts and what the soldiers saw and what was going on in the scene was so expertly assembled that I think this is potentially up for one of the best editing Oscars. And it's not often that I notice editing as a craft.
And no cheap shots, no sudden clanging music, no cat leaping across, no false starts, no red herrings. It was just very tightly, very, very tightly put together.
I love the play between like the surveillance videos and the footage. You know, that to me was wonderful to see that.
Yeah.
I think one of the other great accomplishments of the movie is in making it obvious how utterly lost the hunt for Osama bin Laden became at many junctures, to the point where it was practically abandoned. If what's said in this movie is true, that it meant, you know, that there was only a handful of people who were ever really pursuing this. And at many times politically, people weren't even interested in financing or pursuing it any further. And that to me, I'm not judging at all, but that to me was a bit of an eye opener.
Yeah.
And I think the other piece, which kind of is the movie's accomplishment, is that it made it very clear that the people who were after Osama bin Laden were not these big, heroic, you know, muscle-bound people. They were very ordinary people like you
diligent,
and me.
Diligent
CIA officers who many of them were bench-top people who were just persistently, painstakingly going through piece after piece of information they had, and who just doggedly pursued him and sometimes even gave their lives. But these people were just like us, and I find that tremendously humbling.
Yeah. Okay, anything else on this one, or should we wrap it up? Joe, why don't you go first?
So, nitpicks. The movie was a little bit long, and I think at times the storytelling was a little bit muddled. So, you know, if it was my movie, I would have tightened things up a bit, but, you know, if it was my movie, it would also have been crap, because I have nowhere near any of the talent that Catherine Bigelow, Mark Bowl, and the people that put together this movie have. This was just a fantastic piece of movie making. I enjoyed every single moment of it. The final, you know, the movie finale, which is the raid on bin Laden, almost plays out in real time, and it was so tense, so breathtakingly well executed that this movie gets nothing less than a 9 out of 10 from me.
Okay, a Django moment from Jan.
Like I said, I mean, I have only great respect and admiration for this movie. I, like I said before, I don't think this movie is as or let me say it another way. I think The Hurt Locker is a superior movie to this one. But that's not to take away from this one. I do want to warn people that this is not a movie, again, that in the traditional sense of a movie, this is not an entertainment. This is a piece
it's a recording of history.
Recording of history. It sheds light on what happened, you know, very recently. And I think, you know, it is a great look into what happened behind one of the greatest successful political missions of our time. And that last hour, Joe, like you said, phew, I mean, that's intense. And for all of those things, I give it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah, for me, Zero Dark Thirty is definitely worth a visit to the cinema. I think you'll really enjoy the cinema experience as opposed to watching this in your home. So rush out and see this. I'm going to give this one an 8 out of 10.
All right, next. We have a choice. We are at a fork in the road. We can either go to the promised land or we can address the impossible.
Oh, let's address the impossible.
Okay.
Because that sounds cool.
Rashmi, and in fact, it was almost impossible to find Bin Laden. So there's a
there you go.
A retro segue. Can you do a retro segue?
Sure.
All right.
You can do anything you like.
It's our podcast, right?
Okay, Maria, Henry, and their three sons begin their winter vacation in Thailand, looking forward to a few days in tropical paradise. But on the morning of December 26th, as the family relaxes around the pool after their Christmas festivities the night before, a terrifying roar rises up from the center of the earth. As Maria freezes in fear, a huge wall of black water races across the hotel grounds toward her. This is directed by Juan Antonio Bayona and written by Sergio Sanchez, and this stars Ewan McGregor and Naomi Watts and Tom Holland as their oldest son. So, Yazdi, you were lucky enough to see this on the big screen. So, take it away.
Yeah, I had the honor, actually, of watching it at one of the biggest movie venues that I've ever been in. This was at the Princess of Wales Theatre in Toronto, at the Toronto Film Festival. And that theatre seats about 6,000, no, wow. or 2,000. It's a really big theatre, somewhere between 2,000 to 6,000 people. And, it's mainly for music concerts and the like. And so the music there is just, I mean, the sound there is just impeccable. And I saw it on the large screen there. So it was a very strong experience for me. As far as the movie itself, I think this is the kind of movie that gives melodrama a good name. We usually like to think of melodrama as something cheap and something that filmmakers should avoid. But I really appreciated that this movie is not afraid of going big with its emotions. And while this sort of naked sentimentality fails in most films, and again, we are told that subtlety should be the de facto mantra for every filmmaker, this movie achieves such an unquestionable sense of authenticity with the main characters that I think towards the end it earns the right to draw on that grand scale emotionality. I mean, without a doubt, this was one of the definitive film experiences of the year for me. I loved this movie. I loved it.
Wow. So remember what I said about me and Yazdi signing? Might not happen in this show. Okay, Joe.
Yazdi, just to say, that was one of the most eloquently succinct descriptions of a movie I've ever heard. That was brilliant.
Thank you.
No, that was really good. I mean, I have not a lot more to add to that. I mean, I think this movie was, it was overcooked in many aspects of its writing. And I think in the wrong hands, it would have been a laughable depiction of what happens to a family when a natural disaster of this magnitude hits. Instead, what I found was a terrifyingly frightening account of what it must have been like for a family to get caught up and separated in the manner in which they did. The thing that held it together for me was knowing that it was based upon a true story. So, you know, even though I accept that there may have been certain contrivances for the sake of dramatic effect, I really felt that the movie was genuine in its emotion and the actors got to play the parts that they did and the way that they did with justification.
Okay, I agree and disagree with both of you. Okay, so I think the story did an amazing job of conveying what it must have been like to be in a tsunami and the aftermath. But the film rather washed over me versus drawing me in and really making me connect with it. I didn't feel like it did justice to this horrible disaster that took the life of so many. And I think it's because as a disaster movie, it didn't have enough tension like The Poseidon Adventure or Towering Inferno or even Titanic. I think it tried to be more emotive and it should have been more emotional, but it was more melodramatic. Yes, yeah, use the same word, but more like a Bollywood movie than a Hollywood movie for me. And not good enough to give me even general anxiety. So a sign of a good film for me is that if it's got that much tension that it actually gives me anxiety and raises my blood pressure, and I felt none of that.
Wow. Did we see the same film?
Yeah.
Honestly.
Rashmi and I did see this at home instead of in the movie theater.
With a good sound system.
But for me, it was, you know, props to SoCal Home Theater, by the way.
Yes.
Who set up our AV system downstairs.
Our windows were shaking.
Yeah. The fact that we saw this at home was nothing of a distraction in my mind. I mean, I was right there in the moment when the tsunami hit, so I didn't feel like I missed out by not seeing it on the big screen. But I can't believe you reacted so differently. So
I was going to say, just to react to that, Joe, I think for me, you know, it started with a ton of tension and it looked really promising, but it just fizzled out and became this strange pursuit of each other.
So I think a lot of people have called this movie overwrought, which is fine. A lot of people have called this contrived, but I think that's being a little unfair because this is based on real life events. I mean, how can it be contrived? This is how reality played out. And again, this movie is called The Impossible for a particular reason. So a lot of what transpired kind of bogs the imagination that this even happened. I think, you know, a movie's always treading very dangerous ground, very rough, very difficult ground when the whole basis for the movie is a well-known large-scale tragedy. And such a film can come off tasteless or worst opportunistic. I mean, do you remember what happened last year with Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, which is the 9/11 as its premise? Now, I know, Joe, you got something out of it. I found it offensive.
Yeah, I did too.
But, you know, compared to that movie, to its great credit, I think this movie steers clear of such concerns. I mean, it doesn't seem cheap and it doesn't seem like it's using the premise of the tsunami. And I think even though the movie is very majestic in its scope, I think by sticking to the story of this one family, it personally drawed me in so that I went through that whole experience with them.
But I can see why a lot of the criticism leveled at the movie is. And I guess I can understand, Rashmi, where you're coming from there, that I think about it a little bit. Because for one, much of the story revolves around the braveness. Is that a word? Much of the story revolves around the bravery. Thank you. Of
we've been playing too much letterpress. We're trying to make up words.
Yeah, there's an iPhone game called Letterpress that
we're all addicted
Rashmi to. Rashmi and Yazdi are addicted to. Yes. Rashmi and I are addicted to, and Yazdi
and we are drawing Yazdi into the addiction.
Evil, yes.
So bravery of a little boy who really has to do quite remarkable things because his mother is injured for a large part of the movie. And then, you know, she urges him to be even more brave because he is in a position to help others when they're in a situation that others need help. So, you know, there's a certain sense of disbelief that starts to creep in when you see a young boy being so adult. But again, based on true fact, you know, I can see how a remarkable young man might step up in a scenario like this.
But it wasn't even that, Joe. I remember you turning to me and you went, is this a zombie apocalypse movie? Now, normally we don't talk about films while they're ongoing and we don't ever, you know, for the most part, 99.9% of the time, we don't talk about movies after until we record. But during this film, literally, at one point, Joe looked at me, he's like, this is like the zombie apocalypse.
In part because the movie was, the world, for all intents and purposes, at that place and at that point in time, had ended.
Right.
Everything was wiped out for hundreds of miles around them. So it felt like the end of the world because it was about the end of the world as it would have felt at that
point
in time.
Absolutely.
So that was what I meant by my zombie apocalypse.
Right.
Comment.
But for me, I
and it was frightening. And to me, that was where the movie was very effective because it was absolutely as frightening to me for them in that situation as I think it would have been for those people in that situation at the time.
Yeah.
So for me, that was just a sign of the fact that, you know, here we were safe and sound in our living room, and yet there I was feeling absolutely terrified for these protagonists in their predicament.
So I think when you said zombie apocalypse, I can't even say it, zombie apocalypse, when you said those words, it resonated with me because I took it the other way, which is this really looks like it's a lot of people with a ton of makeup on. For me, that's why it resonated with me because I think generally, And Naomi Watts is getting a ton of hype for Best Actress in some award circles. For me, it just looked like it was tons of makeup.
Really?
And a very flat performance. It was a really flat performance.
I winced
when we saw her leg.
The first hour of the movie.
I winced at everything that she was going through.
Really?
And I couldn't bear the fact that she was so injured and had to move because, you know, getting to safety was a requirement. I mean, that was, to me, a measure of how solid her performance was. And I felt everything. Yeah.
I felt everything for her. I do want to go back to the Tom Holland character because I think for me that character of the oldest son is the most fascinating in the movie. And Joe, you saw it as, you know, as a character who learns to be brave, and you kind of maybe suggested that seemed a little hokey, that, you know, you're asking a teenager
it could be seen that way.
But I actually saw, and by the way, I think, forget Naomi Watts, but I think that the actor Tom Holland who plays the son, you know, deserves an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actor. But for me, the reason why this character resonated for me was because in many ways, I think the entire film is about the development of conscience in this teenage boy. I mean, in the very first scene of the movie, immediately after the tsunami, the mother and son are together. They don't know where the father and the other kids are. And in such a situation, what is your primary imperative? Do you give assistance to those immediately around you who are dying? Or do you go and run and try to seek your loved ones? And the little boy starts off by screaming at his mother to stop helping the other dying people. And he says, let's go and look for our dad and let's go and look for, you know, my brothers. And so he starts off being a person who in that situation is selfish, as is fully understandable. But over the course of the movie, he comes to realize that the only chance his father and his brothers might have had to survive was if some other stranger would have helped them. And therefore, he learns to help other strangers. So I almost saw it as an arc of consciousness, an arc of conscience which develops in this young boy. And I found that tremendously moving.
I agree. I would say that he's the film is from his point of view, absolutely. And I would say that he's the one that goes through the most change in the film. But even then, I found his performance almost annoying at the beginning because he was almost too teenage, like we were talking about This Is 40 and, you know, Maud Apatow. He was almost Maud Apatow-esque in his portrayal of a young tween to start with. But absolutely with you, Yazdi. I think by the end of it, he stole the movie for me.
I can talk about this movie for hours. I mean, I think more than anything else, this movie reminded me of how little in control we are. You know, how little we are in control we are. I mean, within a matter of minutes, your entire life can change irrevocably. And I think we can all live our lives a little bit better with that humility in mind. And I think this movie just brought this together very well. And I like that the movie doesn't concentrate on the special effects, although they are tremendous, you know, during the tsunami, but it's really of what happened afterward. And I think one of the things this movie really does a very good job, and I'm being careful how I say it because it might be a spoiler, but the movie talks about survivor's guilt. It talks about if you didn't perish during the tsunami, if you were, you know, one of the few lucky ones, you know, it's not easy being the ones who survived. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, it was only the very affluent and the ones who were more privileged were able to get out of that situation as well. And I found that very moving as well.
Yes, I think you just mentioned that the special effects weren't overly done with the tsunami, but I mean, for me, the whole tsunami scene was a very long, relatively long piece of the movie. And again, I think in much like Zero Dark Thirty, where the raid on Bin Laden plays out in real time, I got the sense that the tsunami was playing out in real time because I just wanted it to end. Not because it was a bad piece of filmmaking, but because I wanted to suffer the suffering of the characters. I just wanted them to get a break. Yeah. You know, this was like enough. Nature, okay, you've made your point. Leave these people alone. That's how strongly I really felt about it. And it worked brilliantly for me for that reason. Performances were terrific. Naomi Watts, again, you know, I think she's been given a little bit of a Christmas present. This is a fantastic role for an actress, but nonetheless, in less capable hands, this could have been so easily overplayed, and she delivered it pitch perfect. Ewan McGregor was the best I've seen him in a long time in this movie. I really liked him in this movie, and I believed him. I often have this sense with Ewan McGregor that he's play acting and that he's, you know, too busy thinking about how he's going to spend his paycheck as opposed to really being in the moment. And that, I know, is horribly unfair, but here he absolutely nailed it for me. So I'm going to give this movie an 8 out of 10. It was frightening and brilliant and a recommendation to anyone.
Yes, Dee.
So look, we can apply all manner of intellectual scrutiny and rational thought to a film and try to measure it by those, by those standards. But at the end of the day, when you're sitting in the theater seat, you feel what you feel. And I traveled the full emotional arc with these characters. When this movie ended at the Toronto Film Festival, there was absolute silence. And then the movie got a standing ovation. I was one of them standing there and clapping. And I was very, very incredibly moved. And I love it when a movie just takes me over in spite of myself like that. I live for that. I mean, it cut through every shred of cynicism in my being. And for 2 amazing hours, I took this journey with this family. And this is why I think we go to see films. And so for me, anything less than a 9 out of 10 would be unfair to the effect that this movie had on me.
Not a bad film, but not a great movie either from my perspective. Great cinematography and amazing effects. I'll give this one a 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Okay.
Don't look at me like that. I'm getting evil stares.
Here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that, you know, we have this movie while us rule where we don't discuss movies. So I think I need to be more careful when I give you my quippy little zombie apocalypse type comments without being able to discuss the movie in more detail, because you completely read that the wrong way.
It's okay though. That comment didn't change my mind about the movie, so don't feel guilty that my score is lower.
Okay.
As a result of that one. The comment resonated with me because that's what I was thinking, but I was thinking it for a completely different reason.
Okay. Let's mosey on over to the promised land then, Yazdi, if you don't mind, you could give us a quick intro.
So based on a story by Dave Eggers, Promised Land has Matt Damon returning back with his director from Good Will Hunting, Gus Van Sant. The film is set in the somewhat topical story of 2 individuals from a large oil company who are dispatched to a small town in America, which could potentially bear very large natural gas reserves. These 2 characters, played by Damon and Frances McDormand, are tasked with trying to buy out land from the local residents of the town. The town is hurting from a failed economy, and many are willing to give up their land in exchange for what they believe is very healthy remuneration. But not everyone in the town is willing to comply and come on board with selling their promised land. This is further confounded by the arrival in town of a representative from an environmental agency who is all out to take the other side in this escalating duel between the oil company and the local environment. The film also stars John Krasinski, Rosemary DeWitt, and Hal Holbrook, and, as I mentioned earlier, was directed by Gus Van Sant. What do you guys think about Promised Land?
So, I thought the movie was good. A lot of criticism has been leveled at it for being a little bit politically motivated and preachy, and I think that's very clear. But I never felt that it rammed its viewpoint down my throat. And so, yeah, I actually kind of bought into the main story. I'm a little bit tired of the big bad corporate American, you know, plot device trope, whatever you call it. But I also believe that corporations, as they are currently constructed, can be evil. So I kind of gave the movie a pass for that. Clearly, this was inspired by the documentary we saw about a year ago, Gasland, and the events leading up to that documentary and the controversy of fracking. But overall, this was an enjoyable movie that stated its point well. It didn't overstate it, in my opinion, and harmless movie entertainment.
Rashmi.
This is a really average movie. Not bad by any means, but not really good either. This was just good enough. For me, Joe, it was preachy at times, and despite the fact that it was trying to show 2 sides of a difficult topic, I felt it didn't commit to either. So I felt like this was docudrama not done very well.
I see what both of you mean. I mean, I enjoyed this film a lot while it was playing, and I admired its decision to focus on the push and tug between small town America and corporate big business interests. And it's a good story. It's commendable because it has been written by, I forgot to mention this, it has been written by Matt Damon and John Krasinski, who incidentally is the husband of Damon's co-star from the Adjustment Bureau, Emily Blunt. But anyway, I'm not sure that I've seen this movie. I've seen the story in a fictional film before, so I kind of appreciated that.
Yeah.
But you know, I really wanted this movie to devastate me towards the end. I wish it had like a powerful emotional wallop at the end if done right. And so it kind of petered out at the end, and it seemed a bit of a lost opportunity for me. But even though I complain about that, I like the movie, you know, with its minor faults all the same.
I agree it kind of petered out, but I think they were trying very hard to not wallop, you know, to not bash you over the head with a fracking is evil type message, because that's really wasn't what they were tackling here. I think at the core of the movie lies this, you know, motivation by corporations for greed and profit. And, you know, there's also some discussion about the change of, you know, the change in America from becoming a kind of an industrialized farming type economy to one that is more, you know, more city based, and people need to move away. I mean, that to me was the real, you know, it wasn't this whole, you know, fracking is bad for the environment, which I thought the movie was going to tackle head on, and it didn't really go there.
I mean, for me, it was Matt Damon's journey. You know, we start the movie with, you know, him.
Yeah, that's actually very fair. Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, we start with him and we end with him. I don't know. I wish it had taken a stronger point of view. And Joe, you mentioned Gasland, which I loved. It was a great documentary of 2010. I don't know. For me, I'm trying to think why I didn't love it, because Matt Damon was good. John Krasinski was good. Rosemary DeWitt was good, although she was the same character again. It just felt a little bit too forced and overdone. The best thing in this movie for me was Frances McDormand. And I liked the authenticity of this small town, but I felt like we didn't get to the core of the movie.
Which was, in your mind?
I don't know. I feel like we kind of circled around some stuff. And
I walked into it thinking this is all about the evil of hydraulic fracturing and the damage it does to the environment, and all our animals will die and our children will be poisoned. And, you know, it had that kind of sense going into it, because that's really very much this is a very charged debate right now. You know, there's a lot of potential benefits for America to tap into the energy reserves that are beneath the country in terms of shale gas. But this debate, I think, is one that's just, it's very politically charged. And I think the movie doesn't go there in many ways. And I'm glad they didn't do that, because it would not do justice to dramatize it in that way. This is not a kind of a, this shouldn't be an emotional debate. This should be one based upon facts and figures and, you know, real assessments for what's happening here. So I'm glad they kind of stayed away from it, because this was the storybook version of the Gasland story. So, but that made it a little toothless.
Yeah, and I was with you. I was like you, Joe, in that when I was watching it, I was originally thinking that this movie is going to very obviously take sides with, you know, evil corporate America and the oil companies and so forth. And it almost leads you that way with the way, you know, Matt Damon and Frances McDormand's characters are portrayed initially. But then as the movie kind of develops, it does, to its credit, point out to a lot of moral ambiguities. And both sides are actually playing fairly dirty. So I liked at that point that the movie was not taking the easy way out and saying, you know, being preachy about it. So I did appreciate it. And like you, Rashmi, I absolutely agree. The whole movie is about Matt Damon, the journey of the Matt Damon character. And I think, again, like The Impossible, the awakening of conscience in an individual, I think, is enough to form the basis of a movie. And so I could have done without some of the gimmicky revelations towards the end, which it was supposed to be, you know, kind of a wallop at the last act, but it just came off a little. It came off a little forced, a little false.
Contrived.
It was because I think they felt they needed something in there to give us the really kind of moment. And that was not necessary.
I haven't got much else to say about this one.
No. I mean, I'll start. I mean, I think the movie is propped up by great performances by Damon, DeWitt and McDormand, who were all brilliant. John Krasinski here, I think, was very good. So I had a lot of fun watching them and their kind of interplay. The story itself, I think, was restrained enough for me to not, you know, huff and puff and think, oh, here we go, another preachy, anti-corporate, you know, America story. There was ambiguity, like you said, Yazdi, on both sides. So it was directed with enough care and passion to make me care about the movie. I think they were judicious in the tone in which they took. So this gets a 7 out of 10. a, you know, harmless. Go see it, people.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, I mean, I at the risk of repeating myself, I think any movie that stars Matt Damon, Frances McDormand, Rosemary DeWitt, and John Krasinski cannot be awful. I mean, these are some of my favorite actors working today, and I think they all do a fine job here. And I almost want to go back and see this film again to reassess it in spite of what I perceive to be some of its faults. So I give it a 7 out of 10 as well.
I'll finish as I started. This is a really average movie, not bad by any means, but not really good either. If you've run out of everything else to watch, then watch this. But I would recommend you watch the 2010 documentary Gasland instead, because at least it commits strongly to its point of view. 5 out of 10.
Fair assessment.
Cool.
All right. Well, let us know what you think of The Promised Land, Zero Dark Thirty, and The Impossible. Mail at movieworldlaws.com as always. We love getting your emails, so please send them to us. We will do our best to respond and perhaps respond to them on the show. Twitter.com/movieworldlaws, Facebook.com/movieworldlaws as well. Until our next episode, which will be some time from now. Too many movies, too little time. Good night from me.
Good night from me.
And me as well. Happy holidays.